This is Mary Lewis at A Tiny Homestead, the podcast comprised entirely of conversations with homesteaders, cottage food producers, and crafters. Hello, friends. Today is a little different. Suzanne from North County Marketplace offered graciously to interview me about our place. So Suzanne's going to ask me a bunch of questions. Have at it, Suzanne.
Yes. Good morning, Mary. How are you?
I'm good. It's snowing here.
It's snowing. No, we just had a bunch of rain and hail last night.
Yeah.
Snowing. That's either magnificent or an awful feeling.
It was magnificent. It was the big, fluffy, feathery flakes about half an hour, and we haven't really seen that at all this winter. So I opened all the curtains and just stared outside as I drank my coffee.
Okay, so but you homestead, though, and you have a big garden from what I remember the last time, right?
We do when it's not winter, yes.
Well, this is pushing things off a little bit, isn't it?
The ground's already thawed. It's not going to stick.
Okay. See, I am not an avid gardener, so I try every year with my four raised garden beds, but you have a lot more acreage than that. So when did you move to your farmstead and how much acreage do you have?
In August of 2020, of course. Because COVID made everybody change big things. And our garden is like 110 feet by 90 feet. And that doesn't sound huge, but if you think about it,
it's
more square footage than the average lower income family's home. So we feel really privileged.
How many square feet is that? I'm not doing math right now.
Well, 100 times 10 would be square feet.
Okay. My house is 1,200 square feet. So there you go.
So it's much bigger than that.
That's
actually
big. Yeah, yeah. That's really large. Okay. Yeah. So you and your husband decided to move in 2020. Did it have anything to do with COVID? Or you always wanted to homestead, didn't you?
We wanted to eventually have land and not have our neighbors be within talking through the window distance. Mm-hmm. But it sort of did have to do with COVID because we lived so close to our neighbors and it was so hard to be around people, but mm-hmm. not be able to be around people during mm-hmm. that COVID phase. And we had also started a garden at a friend's house, like 3 miles away. They had 24 acres. And my friend said, "Do you want to put in a big garden over here?" And I said, "Are you mm-hmm. sure?" And she said, "Yeah, because we have the room." And I said, "Well, please help yourself to any produce from it." And she was like, "I was hoping you'd say that."
Good
and
trade-off.
So we did that. And then they already had on the books that they were going to build a pole barn, which was fine. We knew that. And when they had the contractor come in, the contractor was like, "So right here is the perfect place for a pole barn," which was right next to where our garden was already growing. Mm-hmm. And we weren't going to be able to do it again next year because it was going to shade it out. So the husband of my friend came up to me and he's very, very shy. And he said, "Mary, I'm really sorry." And I was like, "It's okay. It's your land. You were gracious enough to let us try." I said, "Thank you." And then on the way home, I was crying. My husband was pouting. And he said, "What are we going to do?" And I said, "The only way we're ever going to be able to do what we want to do is find a place of our own that we can grow a big garden on." And he looked at me and said, "Start looking." And
best news ever.
I said, you're not pulling my chain. And I said it not nearly that nicely. There was a swear word or two in there because mm-hmm. I was upset. And he said, "No, call our realtor," because we have worked with her 5 years previous and just didn't find anything. "And tell her what we're looking for specifically, because she's really good at her job." And she is really good at her job. Her name is Lori. She's fantastic. We love her. So it was kind of COVID related, but it wasn't.
A little bit of everything, it sounds like.
Yeah.
It was meant to be. So are you in your dream house? Is it a fixer upper? Is it just the right property that you plan to like
die in? I'm going to die here, and I'm very happy about that.
That's awesome.
It was completely remodeled. It had been on the market for over a year. And we think that part of the reason that no one bought it is, number one, it's really pretty on the inside, but it's very nondescript on the outside. It's the beige siding, and it's just a plain house. And it has a tree line, and it has a humongous pole barn. The pole barn's like twice the size of the house, if not more. It's just, it's not the most beautiful thing. When you think of a farmhouse and a barn, it's not that gorgeous painting that everyone sees. And our town.
Those are actually really hard to find. I mean, yeah. I live in the Midwest. I live in Missouri. And finding those, you really have to go far out, far away from anyone.
Yeah.
So are you pretty far out from town then?
We're only about 5 miles.
Oh, that's not bad at all.
No, and town is tiny. It's about, I don't even know. I think it's like 8 or 9,000 people. But I was going to go somewhere with the, it's not the prettiest thing ever. No, it's okay. I don't remember what I was going to say. It doesn't matter. It's a, oh, I know what it was. Lesore, the town that I live in. There is, I don't know what causes it, but like once in a while, it's really stinky. If you ever live,
not what I was expecting you to say.
If you ever live near a pulp mill, like a wood pulp mill,
okay.
When I grew up in Maine, and the town, like four towns over from my little small town that I grew up in, is called Westbrook, and they had a wood pulp mill for paper and stuff, and it was always stinky, and people would make fun of Westbrook because it was stinky. Lesore gets made fun of a little bit because it stinks sometimes. And it's not terrible, and it's not every day. So I think between the property not being picturesque and Lesore not smelling very good like 5-6 times a year, I think people
That's
are just
it.
Like, eh.
Mm. But you have animals, right? Because those don't smell good anyway.
We have chickens. We have chickens.
Now, I've never actually owned chickens, so do they smell?
If you don't clean out the coop, yes, they are.
Well, I guess so, obviously.
Stinky, yes. But in general, no. If you just take good care of them, they're fine.
Right. And you have how many chickens?
I think last count we had 19.
19. So my biggest fear, I think, with chickens. And now I don't have I can only, in the city of Florissant where I live, I think we can only have 2, maybe 3 at most anyways, which wouldn't really supplement my large family. So it would be more for fun, for practice, for the one day when I live on a bigger homestead. But my biggest fear is predators. Do you get predators? Do your chickens get attacked? How do you handle all of that with having chickens?
We have not had an issue with it yet. They have a coop that they go in and out of all day long. And it's actually one of those garden sheds that you can buy at Home Depot or wherever.
That's what I was thinking to do too, whenever I could. Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool.
And then they have a run off of that. So there's wire out and around the coop. And it's a pretty good size run because 19 chickens need some room.
Great.
And, the other thing that kind of saves us is we're surrounded by will be a cornfield. Right now it is a plowed field. And we have a tree line, but it's not really deep. And we also have a mini Australian Shepherd dog who gets walked all along the perimeter of the property. So her scent is out there. And so the only real predators we would have are like eagles or ospreys or hawks. And chickens are amazing at knowing when to get in the coop. Like,
really? I was just having a conversation with my husband about that, because he was like, so the chickens just know they're supposed to go back in at night. Do you train them, or do they just know?
They just
And you're
know.
Saying they just know? That's what,
well,
that's
at,
what I
at night they want to go in the coop because it's getting dark.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as it starts to
just
get dark, they start heading toward home. Yeah.
Awesome. Yep. That is so neat. So you have 19 chickens.
Yep.
You have a very large garden. You have one dog, and you have cats, don't you?
We have three barn cats right now.
Yes. You have three barn cats. So is there anything in the barn? Or what do you use your big barn for?
Well, the barn is a big garage. We have the truck we use to take stuff to the farmer's markets in there. We have the car, and we have our SUV, which is mine, and it's broken right now. I can't drive it. It's got something wrong with the front, one of the front wheels. If you turn hard, it makes a popping noise. So we need to get it in and get it fixed because I really miss my SUV. I miss it a lot.
Yes, but, I had an SUV. I have a 15-passenger van. One day I will be able to go back to the SUV, and I look forward to it.
Yeah. But we also have the small tractor that we use around the farm. To dig, to flip the compost piles, and to move the wood that gets chopped to feed the wood burning boiler, so we have heat in the winter. And about a quarter of the barn is stuff from the old house that we have not touched since we moved in, and we need to get on that this summer and get that cleaned out and stuff thrown away and stuff donated, because if we haven't looked at it in 3.5 years, we probably don't need it.
We did the same thing when we moved. We moved out of my house and back into my house, and we still have stuff in the garage that I'm like, you know, it's been a while. I guess we don't need it.
Yeah. And my husband likes to do woodworking in his copious amounts of spare time. And so there's like a workbench out there, and he has all of his tools and stuff, and all the tools that he needs to do the stuff around here. Yeah. In the pole barn. So it's a big storage unit is what it is. It's a garage and a storage unit and a workshop.
So you said woodworking, so in his free time, but you laughed that he doesn't have a lot of free time. So most farmers that I work with and talk to, their job isn't actually the farm. They have other jobs outside of the farm and homesteading lifestyle. I know you bring stuff to the farmer's market, which I guess isn't year round, but do either one of you have other jobs outside of, you know, working on the homestead?
Yes, we call it a jobby job. The jobby job is the one off the homestead. And it was called jobby job here before we even thought about moving out. So, yeah, he works for a company that takes care of printers.
Oh.
And I think it's just printers now. It used to be fax machines, but I don't think anyone uses those anymore.
I don't think anyone uses those anymore.
But yeah, He leaves the house in the morning, and he gets home anywhere between 4 and 5. And as the one who doesn't have a jobby job, I usually have dinner ready when he walks in the door, or at least 15 minutes after he walks in the door. Because I figure if he's working his ass off all day, he should come home to dinner, because I want him to feel like he's coming home to a good meal and some peace.
Absolutely.
I'm a good wifey.
We try to do that around here most of the time too. I will say I've gone downhill a little bit. I think I said the last time we spoke that I was pregnant, and I'm 11, almost 12 weeks now. So I'm finally getting out of that sixth stage.
Good.
So it's getting, I started making dinners again a few weeks ago. I was like not even making them. I'm like, cereal sounds great, when normally we don't eat cereal very frequently.
Yep.
But it's one of my addictions in pregnancy. But you,
you have to do what you have to do.
I don't know why that's why your body craves certain things. I'm sure there's something more behind it on what nutrients I'm actually lacking. I just try to survive for about 6 weeks, and then we can move on and get back to normal again, and hopefully have dinners ready when my husband walks in the door, and the front room when he walks in. I like that to be clean, like no kids stuff or clutter.
Yep.
So he can relax when he walks in the door.
He
does the same for me too. If I'm not home because I left to go do something with friends, or because sometimes I have those, or leave the house and come home, and he always has the dishes in the sink all the way completely cleaned out and nothing for me to do when I walk in the door. So he's always really nice about that too.
Yeah. And my husband does stuff for me too, which is fabulous. Cause if it was a one way street, I don't think it would be great. And it's not.
No. Good. So he works with the printer stuff, but then he does all of the garden. Cause you guys grow a lot. to bring to the farmer's market in the summers, right?
Yeah, it's an addiction. He loves, 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 loves. Like, I can't stress enough how much he loves gardening. He has since I met him. And he basically starts the seeds now. We started the seeds on our kitchen table in the little little pots 2 weekends ago, and we now have tomato babies with the second set of leaves. So there's green babies on my table. And he did the basil 2 weekends ago. So I have little baby basils coming. Yeah. And he was like, I was supposed to plant more things this past weekend. He said, but there's no room to put them anywhere. And I said, yes, I know, but that heated greenhouse is going up and you'll have room in there to put things out there soon. So I guess your question is how is he doing work and the garden?
Yeah.
He's as soon as end of January hits, he is planning the next year's garden. There is no stopping him.
Yeah.
And he basically spends weekends from, I don't know, end of March until he puts the garden to bed for good in about October. He's just gardening, or he's thinking about gardening, or he's harvesting stuff to take to the farmer's market. And he also is terribly social. He loves getting out and talking with people.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it all feeds his soul, and he loves it. And I can't make him stop. He's going to do it.
And you make a little side income on top of that. So
yeah. He's going
to
do
you go to the farmer's market with him?
I do not, because I am blessed with social anxiety.
That's my husband. Yeah.
I also am blessed with not being able to filter out sight or sound or smells. If there's noise, I'm hearing all the noise. And if there's movement, I'm seeing every movement there is. And so I have a really hard time parsing senses. And so for me, if I am in a situation where there's lots of people, I can do it. And I'm good at it because I've learned how to be good at it, but I do not enjoy it at all. And when he floated this idea of doing the farmer's markets, I said, it's your baby. I said, I'm not going to go to the farmer's market and sit and or stand and make small talk with a bunch of people I don't know and come home and need to sleep for 8 hours.
Which is funny because you have a podcast.
Yeah,
where but you talk to people that you don't know, but it's in the comfort of your own home. So is that why you're able to do it?
And it's not in person.
Yeah.
And it's one person at a time, typically.
It's all within your control.
Yes, exactly. I'm a minor control freak. Who would have guessed?
Hey, I understand that. That's my husband. He doesn't particularly enjoy social outings. He's a homebody for sure.
Yeah. In my defense, while he's at the farmer's market, I am the one who's doing the dishes and the laundry and making sure there's going to be something for him to eat when he gets back and, you know, all the home things that need to happen. Because if I went to the farmer's market with him, none of that stuff would get done.
And you have some kids at home still, don't you?
I have one. He's an adult kid. He's 22.
Adult.
No, he's an adult. He would very much want me to say that. And he's great about chipping in too. But I just feel like, okay, I'm going to be home and doing the marketing for all this stuff and taking care of the home. And my husband can go do the thing that he loves to do. And he comes home high. He's just like, it was so fun. I talked to so-and-so and I found somebody who wants to talk to you and everybody loved what we sold and da-da-da-da-da. He talks for like half an hour when he comes home.
He's a true extrovert.
Yep. He sure is. I'm sure not, but he sure is.
I think it's interesting because that's my relationship with my husband is I'm the extrovert and he's the introvert. And I think that's fairly common how opposites attract like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
So on your homestead, you have a garden, large garden, to say the least.
Yeah.
You have chickens, you have dogs, you have cats. Do you guys plan to get anything more than that?
I don't know yet. We tried rabbits for meat, and I have said this before on the podcast. I'm going to say it again. They did not get the memo that they were supposed to make babies on a consistent basis.
I thought rabbits just did that.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, no, not my rabbits. My rabbits were like, nah, I'm not interested. I'm gonna go to sleep. I got a headache. So we tried for a year. We got one litter. One.
In a year?
Yeah, they were not taking. I don't know what the heck was going on. So after a year, I was like, do you want to keep trying to raise bunnies or should we just stop? And my husband looked at me, he said, our rabbits are stupid. He said, let's just give it up. I'm like, okay. So we don't have rabbits anymore. It was really, really fun having the baby rabbits when we did because they were adorable. It was really fun being able to go hold a baby rabbit whenever I wanted. That was great until they got big enough to kick me. And then I was like, okay, you're going to be soup at some point.
You're going to be soup.
Yep. But we're not doing rabbits because it didn't work and it was costing us so much money to feed them. There was no.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I wish they had gotten the memo because if they had, we would still be doing rabbits.
Is it maybe a specific type of breed?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think
they were just dumb. Mm-hmm. Dumb bunnies.
Any other interest in the other animals?
Not yet. We had talked about quail, the little birdies, quail.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And the more I dug into it and researched it to see if it was smart to do, apparently quail are experts at unaliving themselves. They do not all of them are going to break themselves to the point of death, but it's a thing with quail. When they startle, they jump straight up and they will break their necks on the roof of the enclosure they're in.
They sound pretty dumb too.
Yeah, and they will drown themselves in their water bowls. I was like, I don't want to spend a bunch of money on a bunch of little birds. And then 2 weeks later, we're down to half. And then 2 weeks later, we're down to a quarter of what we had to start with. That seems kind of defeatist. So we decided not to try quail yet. We're looking into it further, but we haven't done anything yet. We would love to have goats or mini cows or something like that, but with 3 acres, we don't really have the room for them to graze.
Are you supposed to have, you probably know more than I do, 3 acres per cow?
A mini cow, it can be an acre.
Mini. Okay.
But
I didn't know there were mini cows.
Yeah, our garden takes up so much room that there's no space for them to graze because the house takes up a good portion of that 3 acres. The tree line takes up a good portion. The pole barn takes up a huge portion. And the garden takes up a lot. So there's just no place for them to have a fenced in area where they can graze. And feed for livestock is expensive.
Yeah.
So I think we're just going to keep doing the gardening part of the homestead. And the chickens for eggs. And that'll probably be the extent of our homesteading, which is why I started the podcast. So I was like, we're doing the smaller, I don't know, more controllable part of homesteading. And we don't have to face a dead cow at some point in
that.
You know,
that's my biggest fear. Like I said, about the chickens, like predators, and I would love to hear other homesteaders, what they have to say about it, because I guess maybe it's the city girl in me, or I don't know, but I'm not interested in finding a dead animal. You can't just leave it there. You have to do something with it.
Yeah. I can tell you, we have lost chickens to whatever they died from.
Like
Kyle's gone out and found a dead chicken in the coop.
Right.
And he comes in and he's like, we have a dead chicken. And I'm like, I'm sorry to hear that. And he says, just want to let you know. I'm like, how many are we down to? And he tells me the head count of the ones that are still alive. The chickens, it's not so hard because I don't love chickens. Chickens are a means to an end. I love having the fresh eggs in the house. Other than that, they're birds and they should be outside. And they are outside. Mm-hmm. When we lost the first couple of barn cats to our busy highway, that killed me.
Oh,
that was bad. The first one, I sobbed my eyes out. Like, my face was red. My eyes were still red the next day. That's how sad I was about the first barn kitty. And then his brother got hit a couple weeks later, and I was just mad. I was hopping mad, as my mom would say. Didn't even cry. I just swore a blue streak and slammed a couple doors. And my husband was like, are you okay? And I said, I just hate this. I said, why are they so stupid that they keep going out on the road? And he said, because they're cats.
Right.
I was like, well, yes, I understand that, but this is terrible. And he's like, honey, if we're going to live out here, you gotta get to a point where if something dies, you're not destroyed by it.
Who handles the animal when it's dead?
He does, because I'm a girl and I don't want to do
it. Okay, see, yeah, that's very nice of him, because that's the part I freak out about.
We have a very old-fashioned dynamic in our marriage. I am the girl, he is the guy, and he does the yucky stuff, and I try not to do the yucky stuff. That's the dynamic.
Yeah, my husband, as long as he's home to handle it, he will handle the yucky stuff, but... Yep. Not always home, so I do have to handle yucky stuff sometimes too. Not dead animals. We don't have those.
Yep. Well, if Kyle and I
No, that's not true. I had a dead squirrel in a trash can. It drowned in there because the lid blew off in the storm.
Yep.
It filled with rain and the squirrel was dead in the trash can, and I didn't know it right away. So I was like, I have to go empty this trash can. I guess I'll do it at the street. And out comes this dead squirrel. Yeah. And I called my husband, like, screaming, like, what do I do with this thing? I can't leave it at the end of our driveway. It was a terrible experience. All the kids were laughing at me because I was jumping up and down screaming like a girl.
Because you are a girl.
Yeah. And it was gross. And I don't want to deal with dead animals. It's not. Mm-mm.
Yeah. And my theory is I dealt with most of the dirty diapers and the vomit when raising four children. Because he has a terribly weak stomach when it comes to vomit. And so I was the one who changed the gross diapers. And I was the one when the kids had stomach flu that cleaned up the mess and dealt with the dirty laundry from that. And so I feel like I spent my time in the trenches raising the kids because he was at work.
Yeah.
And I dealt with all the hard stuff then. Right. So now that I did all of that and my tiny humans are now big humans and doing their thing, I figure he can deal with the gross stuff now.
I think that's a good trade-off.
That's my theory anyway, and it may sound...
I do change most dirty diapers, especially if he's home. I don't even know the last time he changed one, a dirty diaper, because I just feel like he does so many other things. I'll handle that. I'm used to that. That's, what I do all day. So I got that. You go handle something else that needs to be taken care of, bigger, that I can't do. I will say I did live on my own. We didn't get married till I was 27. So I will say I was a lot more capable of getting things done before I got married, because once we got married, I'm like, ooh, I don't take the trash out anymore. And I still do, don't get me wrong. But we have one boy. So I'm like, oh, you got to take the trash out, buddy. It's time.
Out of eight kids and another one coming, you have one boy?
We have one boy.
Yes. Wow.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of girls in one house.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So we have a 20-year-old, a 15, and then the 10-year-old's the boy. Let me think. One just turned 9 the other day. 9, 7... 4, 2, and 1.
Wow.
Yeah. And they're all girls, but the 10-year-old. So.
Wow.
So they're all banking on this baby. They're actually banking on this being twins.
And
twin boys. Twins don't run in my family, so I don't think that's a high likelihood.
Okay.
But now you have at least two boys, right?
I have. My daughter is 34. And she's in Florida. My stepson is 32 and he's in Nebraska. My next son is 27 this month. Yep. I think. And
it's hard.
And he lives in Minnesota. And then the youngest is 22, boy, and he lives with us.
Yeah, so they all just kind of dispersed, huh?
Yes,
That's and fun, Florida.
That's okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. My oldest, I feel like she wants to travel, so we'll see where life takes her.
Yeah, and honestly, there is a long-standing tradition in my family line of women. My mom moved from Illinois to Maine when she married my dad. And then I moved from Maine to Minnesota with my first marriage that didn't last. And then my daughter moved out and moved to, I'm trying to think, New York, and then California, and now Florida.
So
the oldest girls of my line tend to fly the nest pretty hard and pretty far. So
I live 5 minutes from my parents. I did not go very far.
Yep. Now, in my defense, I did not want to move. I wanted to stay in Maine. But my husband at the time was hell-bent to move to Minnesota for a job. And I was raised that you try to make your marriage work. Mm-hmm. So I moved with him. And then a few years later, I was like, yeah, no, this is not good. And I'm done. And so that was the end of that. And it wasn't just because of Minnesota. There were many other reasons. And I'm not going to talk about them on a podcast to the whole world. But sometimes marriages just don't work out. So
my husband, I'm just a little bit older than him. And so I actually moved out and bought a house when I moved out of my parents' house. Mm-hmm. When we met, he was living in an apartment. So it just made sense that he would move in with me. And we would, you know, figure it out from there on where we would go. And we, for years, looked and tried to buy houses everywhere outside of my small town. And ends up, he actually really, really likes it here. And so do I. So we are actually probably staying here, but we do need to find, there's some small pockets of areas with larger houses and more land,
yeah,
which is our goal, but to stay in the area. It's not actually a small town, but has a very small town feel, that everybody knows everybody, and it's just a very Christian feel too. For everybody, we had for Good Friday, the neighborhood just about, I think it was maybe 2 miles worth of the Stations of the Cross.
Wow.
That different houses volunteered to set up a station in front of their house. So you just walked in. I think this is the third or fourth year they've done it. And my parents were one of the houses, and you just walked from house to house, and it was like a 2 mile loop, which I did not do with my children this year because 11 weeks pregnant. I'm like, nope, not happening. I can't move that much yet.
Yeah. I think that's wonderful that your neighborhood would do that. I am like the least religious person on earth. So for me, it's not something that I would have done or been part of, but I really love it when community comes together to
They just come together. I think that's like that. Yeah. And there's so many things. We have like the Florissant Valley of Flowers Parade. I mean, there's non-religious things too that the community comes together on a regular basis. We have a big parade. And when you're a junior in high school, you get to be one of the queen candidates and, you know, ride on your decorated float. And we just had a St. Patrick's Day parade and music in the park. There's just so many fun little things like that. I think Wednesday nights out, they shut down a street in front of a restaurant and you can, you know, there's a band, live music, just hanging out. So it's just a lot of small town feel for a pretty large town, actually.
Nice. So I have a question for you. Did you want to ask me anything about the podcast?
I do. I did. Okay.
What
yes.
did you want to know?
So when did you start it? Why? Mm-hmm. And how long has it been going?
Okay. I think the first episode was released the last week of August of 23.
Oh, okay. So it's pretty fresh. You haven't had your 1 year anniversary, but
no.
Yet a lot of time. I mean, that's a lot of work.
It's a baby podcast. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's brand new. Why I started it is because when we started our official business at this time last year, which is a tiny homestead LLC, and I own it because there's some real benefits to women owning businesses, especially if you're looking for funding or grants. Ladies out there, if you want to start a business, do it in your name.
I haven't looked up all those. I do have a business in my name, North County Marketplace, Bluefield Kitchen, but I have not looked up anything that benefits me. So you'll have to send some information my way.
I can do that. But the reason why I started is because in the process of starting the business last year and busting our hineys, making lip balms and candles and soaps and growing things and going to farmers markets and marketing it, I was like, marketing is the hardest thing.
Oh my goodness. It's the part I hate the most.
Yeah. And I don't hate it. I actually worked for a friend who had a PR and marketing business for like 6 years in my younger days. And I really liked it. And I really liked learning about it. So I was like, I don't know how to get the word out any more than what I'm trying to do. And if I was struggling with it, I knew that other people were struggling with it. And the youngest son was going to be moving out. So I had empty nest syndrome going on and I needed a new baby. And
joke's on you. He's staying.
And late midlife crisis. So I was like, I need to come up with something that makes me get up in the morning so that I'm like, I get to do this thing.
Yeah.
And my son had come to me and said, you know, like last year, he said, I want to do a podcast with you called Mother and Sunday. S-O-N days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I said, what is it going to be? And he said, well, you know how we just kind of shoot the shit around here and we have these crazy conversations and it's very funny and we all laugh. And I'm like, yeah. He said, I want it to be like that.
Oh, I said, that's sweet.
We can try. And so he got a really nice mic and he got all the stuff set up on his computer and he was like, let's do this. And I said, okay. So we picked a couple topics and we did two recordings. And after the second recording, we listened to it back and he was like, this isn't what I wanted it to be. And I said, well, what do you want it to be? And he said, I wanted it to be spontaneous. I said, you can't be that you can't be that kind of spontaneous with a podcast. You have to have a plan.
Yeah.
And he said, well, this isn't going to work. And I was like, fine. That's fine. I'm glad we tried it. And it was a great idea. It just wasn't going to work in that way. And I really liked it. I really liked the idea of talking on a podcast. Mm-hmm. So it sat in the back of my head for a bit. And last July, when I found out that he was going to be moving out, I was like, I need a project. I need a baby. I need something to keep me from being all sad because last kid, you know. And so I said to my husband, I said, I want to start a podcast. And he said, about what? And I said, I don't know. He said, well, that's not going to work. And I said, I know, I'm working on it. I've got some ideas percolating. I just want to give you the heads up. And he's like, I think you should. It'd be great. So then, like, I don't know, a couple weeks later, I said, what do you think about the idea of just talking with people who are doing the kinds of things that we're doing, only it's different? Just conversations with homesteaders and cottage food producers and crafters. And he said, I think that's brilliant. Is anyone else doing it? I said, not in that way. No. He said, do that. And so I put out the call on Facebook in one of the groups that I'm in who are homesteaders and said, I'm thinking about doing this thing. Does anybody want to take a chance on me and be interviewed? And I had like 10 people in 2 days say yes.
Yeah, that's neat.
And so what was mostly me being selfish and wanting to be able to talk to people because, you know, homesteading can be lonely. Especially when you have social anxiety because you're not out in the world interacting with people every day and needing to fill the gap of the last kid moving out and adjusting to that and just feeling like I need to do something good for the world because I've always wanted to do something good for the world. I just didn't know what it was going to be. That's just how it happened.
Mm-hmm. And how many people at this point, if you know, how many have you interviewed?
I hit over 50 a month ago.
Congratulations. That's a lot of interviews.
And I think there's over 40 released. I think I would have to go count and I don't want to go get my phone. It's downstairs. But yeah, I didn't think people would love it as much as they do.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely interesting. And I have listened to a few of yours, and it's been fun to listen to, especially since I don't homestead. I mean, everybody homesteads in their own little ways, I think. Yeah. Or some people do. You know, I've got the raised garden beds. I don't have chickens. I don't have animals. I don't have a lot of property. So it's very interesting to listen to other people talk about it so I can learn more and understand, like, how everybody else feels about it and how they do it and how it works. And
what it means.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It means something different to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But I thought I would put out a couple episodes and it would just go, you know, I would do two and that would be it. And now I'm putting out 3 episodes a week at 7 a.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And talking to people every day almost. I'm booked for April. I'm almost booked for May. And I'm going to have to start scheduling for June.
Wow.
So I think it's that people love to talk about what they love. And mm-hmm. finding people to talk to me is not that difficult. And
right.
People are always like, I don't know, I've never talked on a podcast and I'm nervous. And I'm like, it's not live. If it sucks, I won't release it. If you don't, if you feel like you don't want me to release it, I won't release it.
Yeah.
And then they calm down.
Yeah.
So, but it's really fun. I am trying to figure out how to market it to a bigger audience, which is my marketing issue right now, because basically when the episode comes out, I post on my 3 Facebook pages. I post on my personal one, a Tiny Homestead podcast page, and a Tiny Homestead page. And then hopefully the person that I interview will share it on their page as well. That's mm-hmm. that's about the extent of my marketing for this.
And right. That's the part I don't like. I like marketing, but I'm very uncomfortable posting things on social media. I'm mm-hmm. not, especially if it's to promote myself, which is uh-huh. what you're supposed to do, but yes. It makes me really uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's hard to toot your own horn if you're not comfortable doing that. And I'm kind of like that too. So right now I'm doing some research into how to get the word out online mm-hmm. about it more. I know that I had my son type in a Tiny Homestead podcast in Google on his phone the other day because his phone isn't associated with anything that I'm doing. And I said, how many listings come up that are mine? And he said, almost all of them on that search set.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I said, okay, type in homesteading. And he did that. I said, does any of my stuff come up? And he's like, a couple times. I'm like, okay, that's good.
Oh, yeah.
So it's all algorithms and internet
mm-hmm.
voodoo. And I don't know enough about it.
I don't know anything about it. I really don't either. That's my struggle. And I think I'm impressed by all of those that do so well, because I'm like, how do you have time to one? First, you have to find someone to interview, right? Then yep. once you get them, you have to schedule them. And that's a lot of communication right there.
Yep.
Then you have to actually sit down and record and talk to them. Then you have to edit it. Mm-hmm. Then you have to put it out there. And it's like, and now I have to find time to market. So you're the one man band. It's just a lot of things that you have to know how to do.
Yeah.
Which is the marketing part. Yeah. I wish I could help with that.
Oh, no, it's okay. I'm good. I just
need to
figure out the magic to this, because I know it's there. I just got to find it. Yeah. It takes about, my husband asked me this the other day. He said, how much time are you putting in a week on the podcast?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, on a given week, 25 hours to 35 hours. He said, but you're not making a penny, but you're working really hard. And I said, yes. And honey, I said, I didn't start this to become rich. No one starts a passion project to become rich. I said, I started this to help other people and to give me something that I care about doing. I said, each episode on average takes from finding the person to talk to releasing the episode, about 2 to 3 hours total. He said, how many are you doing a week?
Mm-hmm. Said, yeah.
5, if not 7. And he said, okay, yeah, that checks out. And I said, but I said, none of this work is hard. And I said, every bit of it I love. So it's good work. And the beautiful thing about this particular format of podcast is that it's conversations. There's very little I have to edit. I've had to edit maybe five of the 40 something I've put out.
Well, in my episode, if you wanted to edit out all the ums that I said.
Nope. Not happening.
It would take you all day.
Yeah. Everyone has their verbal placeholder. For me, it's so is my placeholder.
Mine's Yeah. I was like, oh, okay. I say a lot. Good to know.
And everybody does. My husband's is, you know. He punctuates all of his sentences with, you know.
You know.
You know. Yeah, I know. Or I don't know. I've literally said to him, no, I don't know. Tell me in words what you're talking about. And he just looks at me like, you're not. And I'm like, no, you got to stop. Tell me the words. But no, I hardly ever edit anything.
What was your favorite episode you've done so far? What was the most interesting homesteader? Or whatever. Whatever was most interesting to you.
Okay. Can I tell you the most surprising one?
Yeah.
Okay. I interviewed a woman a couple weeks ago, and I'm putting her episode out tomorrow. I think it's coming out tomorrow morning. She raises Nigerian dwarf goats, I think is what it was.
Yeah.
And I have talked about goats a ton on the podcast because it's chickens and then goats and then cows and then horses and then, you know, it's all a ladder. And I said I've talked about or with people a lot about goats on the podcast. I said, can we drill down on why you're raising them? Because she shows them and she breeds them. And she was like, sure. And so she told me all these wonderful things about why she does it and how she does it. And the takeaway is that if you're going to get a goat, and don't ever get one goat, get at least two because they're a herd animal and they will die of loneliness if there's only one. What you want to do is get a healthy animal from a reputable breeder, which is great.
Right.
She is going to school to be a veterinarian. And I thought this was a later in life choice. And she said that she had tried to get into an internship with a vet and that you had to be 18. And she wasn't quite there yet. And I said, how old are you? She said, oh, I'm 17.
Oh, wow.
I literally gears locked up and I didn't know what to say. And it was luckily it was a momentary gear lockup. And I was like, oh my God, you're a baby. I said, I had no idea you were 17. She's like, yep. I said, you're doing a lot of stuff for a 17-year-old girl. She said, well, my family is actually helping a lot. Da, 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 and told me that story. I was blown away. This young woman was so knowledgeable and so articulate. And when I think 17-year-old girl, and this is probably terrible of me, I think going to high school, interested in boys, and spending a lot of time on their phone. You know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That is not who this young woman is. And I'm not going to say young lady because she's a young woman and she has the world ahead of her. She's got everything open.
Yeah, lots of places she can go. That's great.
So that was the most surprising one. I mean,
I look forward to that episode then. But now the shock value is going to be gone for me, but it's still there for everyone else. This episode will come out later.
Yes, yes. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to ruin it for you, but
you ruined it. No.
That was probably the most impactful one.
That is really cool.
All of them.
Her parents are probably so proud.
Oh, I can't even imagine. I adore her. She's so funny. And her episode was one I had to edit because she started talking and she's doing great. And she was like, Mary, I'm sorry. Can we start over? Because I'm terrible at this. And I was like, you're not terrible at this. And calmed her down. And I said, so I have a question. And she said, what's that? And I asked her the question. And she said, did you start over? And I was like, no, I'll just edit it out. And I did. I edited out from the point that she stopped till she answered the question that I had asked her. But it was so funny because she was so nervous. And when she realized she wasn't being recorded, that it wasn't live streaming, she settled right down.
Yeah, and that is helpful.
It was brilliant. I was so pleased to talk with her because I feel like she's the type of person who brings light and hope to the world.
Very neat. I look forward to hearing that one then.
Yeah, I think it's tomorrow morning. I think that's
so. Every Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 7 a.m.
At 7 a.m. Yep.
You release a new one on. Yep. You've got your Facebook page.
Yep.
Tiny Homestead. Mm-hmm. You have a personal page. And did you say there was another one?
I have a Tiny Homestead for the homestead.
Oh, okay. And then a separate one for the podcast.
Yeah, a Tiny Homestead podcast. Everything that we have is under a Tiny Homestead's umbrella.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, my favorite podcast, I can't pick one. I have loved every single conversation I've had with you guys. And it's like picking your favorite child. I love all my kids. My kids always say that.
Who's your favorite? I'm like, I couldn't even if I tried. Like, right now, you're being the best behaved. So mm-hmm. But I don't have a favorite.
What I love about this is that everybody I have talked to has been a genuinely passionate, good, helpful, kind person who is trying to make their mark on the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes me so happy. I get done talking with people and I'm just high for hours afterwards because I'm thinking about what they said and what it meant and how cool it is that they're doing this thing with their place different than we are with ours, but the same result happens.
Right.
So I'm crazy about this. I love this. And when you said that you wanted to interview me, you know, that you offered to do it, I was like, yes, please, because then I can geek out about what I'm doing too.
Yeah. When you asked me to do the podcast, you know, and I had agreed and we did it. But before I did it, I was trying to research as much as I could on you. And I was like, I want to know more. Mm-hmm. I want to know more about what you guys do. And we kind of talked about it in uh-huh. the episode for me. But no, it's so neat to hear everyone's story on how they came into homesteading.
Yeah.
Most people, I even find their blogs and stuff or their Instagrams now, or I guess are bigger than blogs, but they weren't raised on a farm.
Right.
Or on any homestead. They just wanted that life. I do feel like I'm impressed you found a house during COVID. I feel like during COVID, that blew up. Everybody wanted acreage.
We were just at the beginning of that wave and we were really, really lucky. Huh. Our realtor is fantastic. And when we told her what we were looking for, she was like, okay, you have given me a really big challenge because a lot of the stuff you want, I don't think we're going to be able to get it all in one spot. And I was like, mm-hmm. these are the things that we would really like, but we just need to get out of where we are. Mm-hmm. And the house was more expensive than our budget would have allowed had she not been as good at negotiating as she was. And mm-hmm. so we lucked out huge, and it had been on the market for over a year, and the seller, I think, was ready to let it go. So it was right place, right time, right person.
That's great.
Yep. And so thankful. I mean, I love this place so much.
Oh, I'm so happy for you. I look forward to getting to that point in my life where we get to do that too, and I'll call you for all the tips and tricks with chickens.
You get chickens, you give them a home, you feed them, and you make sure that you take care of them, you know, the bodies if they die. That's pretty much it, really.
Oh, see? Yeah, I'll call your husband. Come on over. No. They're dead.
Want to come move a chicken for me? Yeah. Oh,
it's a long drive.
The one thing I will tell you is our chickens tend to fly the run, not the coop. They don't fly the coop. They fly the run. They get out on their own very often. And you can make a chicken stop being able to fly by cutting like half an inch off the tips of one of their wing feathers. Mm-hmm. It doesn't hurt them because then they can't fly. They can still run and they can still get a little lift, but they can't fly. So you will probably have to trim their feathers at some point.
So you don't have any escapees?
Yep.
Interesting. We have just so many. So we're pretty close to the river. So we have so many hawks and so many owls. There are just that live literally next door in the tree above our house. So I'm always like, I just don't think they'd survive here. And if not that, one of the little children picking them up in a harsh way would probably got to train the children more than the chickens.
Oh,
Stay away.
absolutely. Yeah, the chickens know what they're doing. The kids may not quite know what to do with the chickens at first.
Right.
I actually had to tell my kid today he was playing ball with a dog, and she loves it when they roughhouse with the ball. She won't give him the ball, and so he has to mess with her to get her to let go of the ball. And he tipped her over on her back, and there were pillows against the arm of the couch, and her head hit the pillows, and there was a little tiny thunk, but not a brain hurt thunk. I said, please don't break the dog.
Yeah,
And
and
he's
he's
22,
22.
so there you go. And she's 35 pounds. She's a solid little critter, but I was like, don't brain her. Do not give her brain damage, because I will never be able to talk on the podcast again about anything, because I will just cry about my dead dog. That would not be good.
That would be pretty terrible.
Oh, I don't even want to think about it. This dog has my heart. She's my fifth baby. So no, not no one can hurt the dog. The dog is precious.
Like another baby in the house.
Oh, has been since we brought her home. She
That's
was
sweet.
5 pounds of fluff, and I love her to pieces. So
So do they do, does your dog ever go out with the chickens?
she does not.
She stays in the
Mostly
house.
Because she's gross and she wants to eat the chicken poop.
Oh, see animals, yeah.
Yep,
One of them.
but if she's out on her lead out by where the chicken run is, she runs around the chicken run so that she can make the chickens move. So she's trying to herd them through the fence.
That's exactly what you want, right?
Yeah, she's crazy.
That's fun.
Yep, and she did get introduced to them. I think she was probably 3 months old, and she
Yeah,
got
isn't
in.
that kind of when you have to do that?
Yeah, and she was
Whenever.
on a leash, and my husband took her into the run, and she kept trying to chase the chickens on the leash, and he couldn't let her go because, he didn't want to eat chickens, so he would just walk her over the chickens, and they would, of course, scatter and squawk, and she'd jump back like, what are those things? So that was very fun. I wish I had videoed it, but we were so in the moment that I didn't even think about it.
I never get things on video because I don't think to pick up my phone and take pictures or video.
Yeah, speaking of that, my kid bonded with the male barn cat that we have. The barn cat was feral. We got him from the Humane Society, and they told us that he would never let anyone pet him or hold him, ever. That was a lie. The kid and the cat are best friends now, but the cat hates being held. Like, he'll let Cameron do it, but the cat does not like it. So my husband got video of Cameron holding the cat, and it's dark in the pole barn, so it's very shadowy, and the cat is black, and he has green eyes, and the way the light was hitting the cat, his eyes look like sapphires. And so it's just this 10-second clip of our barn cat being held and growling. I uploaded it to Facebook just because I thought it was funny. Not Facebook, YouTube on our channel. And there's not a whole lot there, so don't get all excited, people, about my YouTube channel, because it's basically brand new. But anyway,
Get there.
ended up getting 10.4 thousand views.
Oh my
Ten thousand point
goodness.
four. Over the course of a couple of days of people watching our stupid cat growl.
Gosh, that's hilarious. People love animals. They really do.
Yeah, I was
Cat
like, are you
videos.
kidding me?
That's great. Start all your videos with that clip.
Yeah, so
And then.
I told my husband and my son, I said, anything that you guys are doing out there that you think would make for an interesting video for our YouTube channel, please take out your phone and do it, because you always have your phones on you.
You're right.
So, but anyway, we're almost at an hour
Yeah,
here, and
well,
I
it's
don't.
been awesome getting to know more about you this time and your
Yeah,
homestead.
it's really weird being the one on the other side of the questions.
Yeah, well, it's been fun. And I'm excited for future podcast episodes that are coming out, especially Wednesdays. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, tomorrow morning at 7.
Yay. Good. Good for you. It's a lot of work, and I'm impressed.
Thank you. I'm trying my hardest to keep going and keep being consistent and do the things that I need to do for this, because I think it's a good thing. I hope it's a good thing.
Well, it's definitely a good thing. I mean, showcasing people and the homesteading lifestyle, and I think is great.
Well, I'm going to keep doing it because everybody is so interesting. And until I can't do it, I'm going to do it. So.
Well, I don't think you'll run out of anybody anytime soon. So
I don't either. There's a lot of people in the world doing really great things. So, all right, Suzanne, I appreciate you taking the time to interview me today.
Thank you for allowing me to. I appreciate it. It's been fun.
All right. You guys have a great day.
You too.
All right. Bye.